Who wrote The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings in-world? Was it Bilbo? Frodo? And what about the Silmarillion and the rest of the Legendarium? Who does Tolkien say wrote them? Let's take a look. Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel, we cover the best in fantasy and science fiction books and TV shows, The Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones, and more. If that sounds good, there's a subscribe button in the bottom right of your screen. Of course, Tolkien wrote The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, and also the wider Legendarium with some editorial help from his son Christopher, but he always kept up a writing conceit that he was just an academic who had discovered some ancient texts written by other people and had translated them for us. You can find this as early as the first page of the prologue to The Lord of the Rings, where we read, "This book is largely concerned with hobbits. Further information will also be found in the selection from the Red Book of Westmarch that has already been published, under the title of The Hobbit. That story was derived from the earlier chapters of the Red Book, composed by Bilbo himself." So Tolkien was very clear on who in-world wrote the stories we read. Let's start with The Hobbit, which, as we've seen, was written by Bilbo. There and Back Again, as Bilbo initially titled it, began as Bilbo's memoirs regarding the quest for Erebor, and was started after he returned to Bag End, as early as the year 2942 of the Third Age. He was still working on it when he left the Shire for Rivendell, and even when Frodo and Co. meet him there in The Lord of the Rings. He finally finished it sometime prior to October 3019, possibly with the long-planned ending, and he lived happily ever after to the end of his days. Bilbo packaged his journal in a red case alongside three large volumes bound in red leather, for which it was soon called the Red Book. It contained his translations from the Elvish, about which more later, and in marginalia and loose leaves were numerous poems Bilbo had written, such as The Man in the Moon Stayed Up Too Late and Errantry. So The Hobbit and various other bits and pieces were written by Bilbo, which brings us to The Lord of the Rings. Because on October the 5th, 3019, Bilbo gave all of this material to Frodo. Within just a year and a half, Frodo had nearly filled the remaining pages of the journal with the account of his quest. By March the 26th, 3021, the state of the manuscript was such that, at the beginning, there were many leaves covered with Bilbo's thin, wandering hand, but most of it was written in Frodo's flowing script. It was divided into chapters, but chapter 80 was unfinished, and after that were some blank leaves. This indicates that even the chapter breakdowns were part of the original Red Book, and not arbitrary divisions by Tolkien. So Frodo wrote the vast majority of The Lord of the Rings up to the Scouring of the Shire, and then passed it on to Sam to write the last chapter in its entirety. Before Sam left Middle-earth, he passed the manuscript to his daughter Eleanor, who in turn passed it on to her descendants, the Fairbairns. This all became known as the Red Book of Westmarch, because the Fairbairns lived in Westmarch, the new lands on the western edges of the Shire, and kept the documents, fast becoming official historical documents, there. They added to it that Samwise passed westwards over the sea, and in addition to Bilbo's journal and the three volumes of Elvish translations, a fifth volume was added, containing commentaries, genealogies, and various other matter concerning the Hobbit members of the Fellowship. These likely included treaties penned by Merry, Herb Lore of the Shire, Reckoning of Years, and Old Words and Names in the Shire. Though no works were written by Pippin, he was responsible for delivering to King Elessar, Aragorn, the first copy of the Red Book, then called the Thane's Book. So all four hobbits in the Fellowship played their part in bringing together these writings. At which point, we get our first editorial team, because the Red Book was then amended, corrected, and added to in the form of commentary by various wise Gondorians. Among these, the most substantial addition was from Barahir, the grandson of Faramir, who authored The Tale of Aragorn and Arwen. An abridged version of this tale was inserted into the Red Book by Findigil, the king's writer serving under Eldarion, Aragorn's son and heir. Findigil composed this copy of the Thane's Book in the year 172 of the Fourth Age, the only complete copy of the Red Book, including sections not copied in most subsequent manuscripts, such as Bilbo's translations from the Elvish. Findigil's manuscript was preserved in the Great Smiles, the ancestral home of the Took family, and is the last known link in the chain between Bilbo's journal and the text from which Tolkien translated. Tolkien, however, never elaborated on the provenance of the text to which he had direct access. If it was Findigil's codex or a copy or adaptation from that, we do not know. So those are the two books that Tolkien published during his lifetime. But what about the wider legendarium? To start with, who wrote the Silmarillion? We mentioned a couple of times now Bilbo's translations from the Elvish, histories and tales he recorded while in Rivendell, both from old manuscripts and talking with the Eldar there. Christopher Tolkien suggests in the prologue to the Book of Lost Tales that this is probably what his father based his own writings on, but it does lead to the question, who wrote the original manuscripts that Bilbo translated from? Tolkien obviously never completed the Silmarillion, and was still making revisions to what he'd written in the last years of his life, including which characters wrote which works. But throughout the history of Middle-earth, there is evidence for which characters had written which works in Tolkien's latest conceptions, even if such might have changed had he lived longer. There are five sections to the Silmarillion. Regarding Einar Lindele, the first, the creation myth, we're told that this was made by Rumil of Tirion in the Elder Days. It is here written as it was spoken in Eressëa to Elfwine by Pengolod the Sage. To it are added the further words that Pengolod spoke at that time concerning the Valar, the Eldar, and the Itani. We'll get to Elfwine and Pengolod in a moment, but let's start with Rumil, who apparently first wrote all this down. Rumil was a Noldo elf who lived in the city of Tirion in Valinor in the Elder Days. Despite being one of the Noldor, Rumil seems not to have been among the exiles to reach Middle-earth, as his prolific writing suddenly ceased at that time, and his works were amended in his absence. By the time of the exile, Rumil had achieved a reputation of having such great knowledge that he was one of the few Eldar in Valinor to whom the word wizard was applied. The music of the Ainur is not, however, a mere scholarly work like the others in Rumil's corpus. It is alone among all the writings which Tolkien translated in explicitly having a claim to divine revelation. We read that of the creation story itself, this must have come from the Aratar, those are the top Valar, themselves, for the most part, indeed from Manwë, it is believed. The second section of the Silmarillion, the Valaquenta, also touches on issues around the nature of the Valar, and so we can expect that to also have some input from the Valar themselves, perhaps written down by Rumil again, although we aren't told. Interestingly, this section also has the hallmarks of later editorialising, reflecting on much later events, for example in saying this about Sauron. In after years, he rose like a shadow of Morgoth and a ghost of his malice, and walked behind him on the same ruinous path down into the void. Which implies that even if the original text was written by Rumil or another of the Eldar, the version we have today probably emerged from something edited by the Gondorians. Rumil's work was continued in Middle-earth by Pengulur, the author of the third and largest section, Quenta Silmarillion, the history of the Silmarils. He was of Sindarin and Noldorin ancestry, born in Nevrast and lived in Gondolin from its foundation. We are told that he was one of the survivors of the destruction of Gondolin, from which he rescued a few ancient writings and some of his own copies, compilations and commentaries. It is due to this, and to his own prodigious memory, that much of the knowledge of the Elder Days was preserved. He collected much material among the survivors of the wars at Sirion's mouth. Pengolod is said to have remained in Middle-earth until far on into the Second Age for the furtherance of his inquiries, but when the shadow of Sauron fell upon Eriador, he left Middle-earth, the last of the Loremasters of Tongues, and sailed to Eressëa. The fourth part of the book, Akalabeth, meaning the Downfallen, was written by Elendil in Gondor after the fall of Numenor. He and his sons were first-hand witnesses to the events described towards its end. The final part of the book, of the Rings of Power and the Third Age, was likely finished, if not written entirely, in the Fourth Age or later. Given its focus on elves and relegation of hobbits to the periphery, it's unlikely to have been part of the Red Book, and deals with events too late to have been among Bilbo's translations from the Elvish. So the Silmarillion was, as it reads, the writings of a variety of authors in a variety of styles. But what about the rest, the even wider writings of Middle-earth? Well, Tolkien tells us that most of the other texts he was translating from were written by Rumel or Pengelod, who we have already met. Typically, works written after the Exile, the First Age onwards, were penned by Pengelod, but writings from beforehand were only preserved by him, having been originally written by Rumel. There is much more that could be said about that, of course. Tolkien wrote a lot of essays, poems, and thought pieces over the years, but we can't end this without also covering one of the most important, though relatively unknown, characters in Tolkien's legendarium, Elfwine. Elfwine was Tolkien's way of linking his creation with our world, at least in his earliest conceptualization. Though not the author of any texts himself, he worked as a translator of all of the texts, aside from the Red Book, into Anglo-Saxon. Elfwine was an Anglo-Saxon mariner living during the early 10th century in our world, who came upon the Strait Road by accident and washed ashore on Tol Eressëa. There he read and translated Elvish writings and received instruction on Elvish lore, eventually returning to England and recording them for us. We don't know what Tolkien's final conception of Elfwine might have been had he completed the Silmarillion, but he was not mentioned in The Lord of the Rings or the final version of the Silmarillion, and Christopher Tolkien clearly believed that the need for him had been overtaken by the importance of the Red Book of Westmarch. But given the numerous references to Elfwine throughout Tolkien's writings after the publication of The Lord of the Rings and up until his death, Tolkien seems to have never fully abandoned the conceit of Elfwine as at least one of several mediate sources of his manuscripts. All of which brings us to the crucial matter of what Tolkien was doing with all this detail and ambiguity. Just to take The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, they were originally penned by three different authors, added to by another, then edited by another unknown number of Gondorians, passed back to the Hobbits, and so on. Moreover, we have multiple instances in which we know the record of events differ from the events as they happen, or at least differ from the earliest records. Bilbo's earliest writings contained an account of the acquisition of the ring in which Gollum was willing to award it to Bilbo in the riddle contest. He only changed it after Gandalf pressed him on it. And Tolkien didn't seem to want us to view what we read as any kind of objective certainty. He would even reply to readers' letters expressing uncertainty about the truth of certain matters in his creation, or saying that he hadn't discovered some things yet, or that there were translation difficulties. He didn't need to do this. Elves in his world possess superlative memory, which, combined with their longevity, means that their own records were capable of reliability, even with respect to the most remote events of the past. He could have had Galadriel or an even more ancient elf record things if he wanted it to come across as a more reliable record. But he didn't, which speaks to the verisimilitude of the world he created. One of his most effective means of imbuing it with authenticity is the detailed chain of textual transmission which he feigned. His scholarly knowledge of real manuscripts and their provenances lent his fictitious ones an air of credibility. Tolkien's legendarium is deliberately not a straightforward record of events presented by an omniscient narrator. Like the Norse or Greco-Roman myths, its tales were told by many writers, each with their own perspective and purpose, altered by authors with agendas of their own, only partially preserved and passed down, and invariably transformed through the process of translation. This is what Tolkien intended for us to keep in mind from the first moment we begin reading The Lord of the Rings. It isn't an exact account of what happened. It is mythology, which is, after all, what he set out to do. Not just create another great story, but a mythology for England, as he put it. And as the popularity of the stories only increases with time, I think he succeeded. If you'd like more videos about Tolkien's world, please click on the link on the left of your screen. Or for my new channel with lots of live content, please click on the link in the middle of your screen. That's all for this time. Thanks for watching. I'll see you again soon.